Vampire Weekend with I Think You're a Contra. Before that, we had Bastille with Winter of Our Youth, preceded by Sin with I'll Still Have Me, Hippocampus with Passenger, Foals with Late Night, and once again before, or actually right after the 4:30 mark, we had Layla with Smokestacks. It is 5 o'clock, so that is it from me. We're going to take a short break, and then Living Writers is up next. We're back again after a week off. It was cold out, so yeah, thanks for hanging with me this whole hour here, and I will catch you next Wednesday. Thanks, and goodbye.
Well, I'll tell you about punk rock. Punk rock is a word used by dilettantes and heartless manipulators about music that takes up the energies, and the bodies and the hearts and the souls and the time and the minds of young men who give what they have to it and give everything they have to it. It's a term that's based on contempt. It's a term that's based in fashion, style elitism, Satanism, and everything that's rotten about rock and roll.
The seizure experiment. Punk. Metal. Noise. Sundays 10 to midnight on WCBN FM Ann Arbor.
Wait, I don't know Johnny Rotten, but but I'm sure he puts as much blood and sweat into what he does as Sigmund Freud did.
If your dad was crossing, you'd stop. If your favorite Aunt Judy was crossing, you'd stop. If your high school biology teacher, Mrs. Jones, was crossing, you'd stop. If your next door neighbor, Dan, was crossing, you'd stop. If your niece, Kelly, was crossing, even though you think she's sort of flaky, you'd stop. Even if someone dressed in a chicken suit was crossing because you love chickens, you'd stop. In Ann Arbor, we stop for pedestrians at crosswalks. Period. It's the law.
Hey, this is Sarah from Cara Cara Bonito, and you're listening to WCBN FM on Arbor.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel, and today on the program, I'm so happy to have Katie Cook joining us via phone from Brighton, right, Katie?
Yep, I'm out in Brighton.
Thank you so much for being game for radio via phone on an icy day.
It is very difficult to go into Ann Arbor when roads are a sheet of ice.
Oh, completely. And you're talking to us from your home office, right?
Yes.
And that's where you do the predominance of your work. And today was the launch of the latest chapter of your webcomic, Nothing Special, the current
project. Yeah, it's I put out a chapter every single week.
That's so, I mean, it sounds wonderful for readers, but almost like, does that feel sort of relentless for the maker, or no?
It is. It's basically when the webcomic is in production, it's a full time job because you know we're doing between 30 and 60 full color panels a week, and you know I have a production team that I pay. I have a colorist that lives in Malaysia. I have a letterer that lives here in Michigan, out in Belleville. And
is that Nathan Pride? Would that be your letter? That was okay.
Yep. And technically, it's through a publisher. You know, it's the site that I do everything through is a publisher, and they pay me weekly to put out content. And they're out in L.A., and they're owned by a Korean company called Line. So it's really crazy. I'm sure we'll get into it.
Oh, my gosh. I know. I almost don't know where to start. Yeah, it seems like there's so many interconnections of people. And if you're... As an artist, as a working artist, it seems like you have sometimes multiple projects going at once too. Even if
I do, I have three or four books that I'm doing at the same time. So it's a juggling act.
And you just mentioned a moment ago that this project, Nothing Special, is a full-time job.
It is, and you know, I mix in stuff with it. Of course, you know, I take on other illustration jobs or other writing gigs while I work on it. So it's a really crazy balancing act to do something like a webcomic that is not, you know, like four panels, like a typical, what people think of when you talk about a webcomic. Because it's almost a full issue of a comic a week. I mean, it's crazy.
So why did you break from the more like typical mode of like four panels for Nothing Special? Was it because the storyline required it, or was it just that you were interested in seeing what this could look like with these like expanded chapters?
I come from a background of traditional comics, and you know, I did a four panel webcomic for really a long time, Gronk, a monster story. And, you know, then I self-published it, and then it went to a publisher. And then I ended up not doing it for a while because I got into doing licensed books for kids. I was doing stuff for IDW, which is a comic book company. And I was the lead writer for My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. So I worked with Hasbro. I worked with IDW to, you know, write these comics, you know, that fit in with the TV show. And then I started doing writing stuff for Disney. I've written stuff for Marvel. I did one little project for DC. And so I started getting overwhelmed with all of these other projects. And I really turned more towards, you know, mainstream comics for several years. And Nothing Special is a return to what we call a creator-owned project. For me, which is something that is mine. I write and I draw it, and it's completely my concept, completely my idea, basically taking what I've learned writing for all of these major brands and putting it back into something that I want to do. And looking at what people think webcomics are and what I thought of them when I was doing one years ago, I really wanted to push what people's concept of what is essentially free content is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a big lesson in that, you know, I went and I wrote the entire script for especially this season of Nothing Special. That's what we call the books. We call them seasons instead of like book one, book two, it's season one, season two. And I really broke down, you know, the script into where my chapter breaks should be. And each week is a chapter. And, you know, I don't want to just do, oh, well, I only have time for 4 to 8 panels this week, so that's all I'm going to put out. No, I want every single week to end on that note that brings you back. So it's all very thoughtfully crafted. And to get to that, you need to put out 30 to 60 panels a week, you know, to make this really engaging, you know, world-building event. And I can't do that in four panel stints, you know, which is like a newspaper comic, which is what I essentially wanted to do when I was a kid. I wanted to be the next Bill Watterson. I wanted to do Calvin and Hobbes.
Right.
You know, right now I'm now working on something that's mine, and I'm trying to make it, you know, really something different than people's normal views of what, you know, a webcomic is, which I equate, you know, people think of webcomics as like old school zines from comics, like the people that are at a Comic-Con with their little ash can that's like printed off at Kinko's and stapled, and just this little thing that people think is a pastime or, you know, a hobby. And there are people out there that put out webcomics that are so professionally done, or, you know, people like me, I put my own money into the production of everything.
Well, and they're so intricate, too.
Yeah.
And the ambition is clear, like the ambition behind them.
It's a business, and, you know, we also get paid based on readership and stuff like that, but that's still me investing, you know, X amount of my own money a week into it, because this is a project that I really believe in. And then at the same time, I'm also working on other projects. Right now, I'm illustrating my fourth Star Wars children's book at the same time. And, you know, sometimes I take breaks. A few weeks ago, I came back. I had stopped writing for My Little Pony for about a year and a half, so I could focus on Nothing Special, but they're starting to wrap up the series a little bit. So I came back for one last hurrah with My Little Pony.
Well, how could you not?
Writing,
right?
Yeah. So I was writing five issues of Pony Comics while I'm trying to do all this stuff. And at the same time, I think it was during this one, I also did something for the anniversary of Fraggle Rock for Boom and the Jim Henson Company. Wrote and drew some stuff for that. So I'm always mixing in other projects. And then, you know, I come back to Nothing Special as being my project because it's my baby. And I really believe in the format of webcomics right now, because I am very big on the fact that, you know, they're people's passion projects.
Yes.
When you get into comics, and it's where a lot of talent goes now, because, you know, we used to have to go show our portfolios around at conventions and hope that somebody noticed us. But now, because of the internet, I mean, if you have a good comic, it can go viral in an instant. And there are people that started out just a few years ago, but because they are clever and they have really, you know, gotten into a niche, they've all of a sudden they have their webcomic, and then there's print books through major publishers and things like that. So I'm all for webcomics. I think that, you know, putting your work online is one of the best things you can do when you're in comics.
And you have for Nothing Special, it looked like when I was on webtoons.com earlier today, I think like 23,000 plus, like, or 24,000 for a chapter.
Yeah, and those are just the people that bother to click on the heart. The actual readership, you know, we're talking tens of thousands of weekly subscribers. You know, more than that. And it's crazy. And especially with Webtoon, you know, people that, you know, don't think of, you know, webcomics as something that's a publishable thing. I think of Webtoon as an online publisher,
right?
Because they are. There's the featured content is curated content. That is what they consider to be published. That is paid content that they have brought on talent to create. And I consider them an online publisher. You know, not just a webcomic. They are the people that put out this book every single week. And then they also have a kind of, you know, they call it the challenge section or the discover area. And there are people that upload their own. And, you know, you can kind of see what their readership is and stuff like that. And, I mean, some of those people get pulled up, like, the second they see how popular their comic is. They're like, we want to pay you to make this. Let's bring you on up to the big leagues.
Wow. I mean, and that could be life-changing.
It is. And, you know, they've only been in the U.S., I think it's 4 or 5 years. You know, originally they're a Korean company, and they have websites all over the world with all of this translated content. They have 5 million daily U.S. subscribers.
Wow.
So think of, you know, how many readers that is. If you are in comics, and you no longer have to go through the distributor of, you know, a print media. You don't have to go through all of that, you know, to go like, well, I have to print the book. I have to have the money to print the book. I need to make sure comic stores carry my book.
Right.
Or I can say, how about I try and produce X amount of content per week? I put it all up every single week, and I have a list of subscribers. I have a built-in audience through this site. Especially since a lot of people that are on this site, you know, there's lots of adults, but I do a YA comic. And, you know, most of this audience is teenagers, which is great for me. And it's, most of them are absolutely lovely. I know that people are always like, oh, the comment section is the worst thing in the world. No, these guys are so sweet and they're wonderful and understanding. I get kids that reach out to me all the time to talk about comics or talk about my artwork. And I'm coming from a background of, you know, I've drawn stuff for Star Wars. And I mean, I get people that like my Star Wars books, and that's fine. And I wrote for My Little Pony, which is a hellscape from which there is no return, because they have there's a toxicity to the fandom where most people are fantastic, but there's like that 1% that is not great, and those are the ones I remember. Then I shifted over to, you know, doing this really, you know, I it's an all ages book. But I really focus on, you know, my lead characters are 17, 18 years old. So, yes. You know, there's a relatability there that's 14, which is new for me that I work with characters that age. And every single one of them has basically been, you know, every once in a while I get a comment that's like, this artwork is weird because it doesn't look like, you know, an anime. So it's very Americanized cartooning. And, you know, but most of the comments are just absolutely, you know, interactive with the story or complimentary of the art or the writing. And sometimes, you know, right after I post a chapter, you know, you get, you know, a couple hundred, 300 comments right off the bat.
Jeez. So people were waiting too, waiting to
read
it.
Yeah, they're just really invested in what's happening.
Oh, now this is so, well, Katie, I love this, and it's so heartening to hear let's take a short break. Thanks for picking the songs for today's show. So we'll take a really short break and we'll be back. Today on the program, Katie Cook joins us via phone. We're talking about her current project, Nothing Special, the latest chapter launched today. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Stephanie behind the glass. We'll be back.
By the light switch, who watches over you? Make a little birdhouse in your soul, not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. I have a secret to tell from my electrical well. It's a simple message and I'm
welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm so glad you did. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. And today on the program, Katie Cook joins us via phone. Katie, thanks for picking. I was that song. It was so hard to stop it. But I wanted to get back to our conversation.
It resonates with me every time I hear it.
How so?
My ringtone. For me, it speaks of, you know, creativity. It's you know, the thing that's in you, and it's got something in it, and that's the thing that you're trying to let out.
Oh, it's the birdhouse in your soul.
It's the birdhouse in your soul.
Yeah, they might be giants. Had some great words of wisdom across many songs, but that being perhaps the best, I think. Too. So Katie Cook joining us via phone. We've been talking about Nothing Special and many of your, like, across your history a little bit with the work. Maybe we could rewind a little bit to think about, like, way back in the time machine, like little Katie, were you always drawing? How did this happen for you? Because I think I read on your site, that cartooning was all you ever wanted to do with your life.
Yeah.
Except as a kid, to be a Muppet or a robot.
my parents tell the story of when I was in kindergarten, you know, when you're asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I very clearly stated, I wanted to be a cartoonist. And it's, you know, I grew up reading comics, and I learned how to read over the comics section of the Detroit Free Press every morning, you know. And, you know, as my parents got ready, I was a latchkey kid, so my parents would wake me up. They'd dump me at the kitchen table with some peanut butter toast.
Oh.
And they'd hand me the comic section of the paper while they finished getting ready. And that is what I grew up as, like, this central focus 5 days a week for the entire school year was having the comic section in front of me. That was back when it was three pages and not whatever it is now.
Right. And what were your favorites then? Was it Bill Watterson's Calvin and Hobbes?
Calvin and Hobbes was always my favorite. You know, it speaks to, you know, every single person on another level. I mean, it's just, it's brilliant. And then I loved, there was one called Foxtrot that I just really loved that because it had a nerdy kid in it, but it was, you know, just the nerd family dynamic. And there, you know, there's always others. There's, you know, Peanuts, you know, everybody loves Charlie Brown.
You got to run in with Snoopy.
Yeah. And there was one named Luann by Greg Evans that, especially when I was in middle school, I really liked because it was a teenage girl that was kind of struggling through school. And, you know, there's always really, really great stuff in the paper. You know, even now there's some really good ones. But, you know, from there I moved on to reading a lot of Archie comics, and then I got into reading some superhero comics. And then it really wasn't until much later on when I read Jeff Smith's Bone that I realized that actual comic books didn't all have to be superheroes. Because his is a very adventurous story, and it's got these two, you know, very cutesy characters mixed with these very lush backgrounds and very well-rendered people. And that was my first instance of, like, oh, a comic book doesn't have to be Spider-Man.
Right.
And I started drawing just little comics for myself. I remember in high school for a creative writing class, we were supposed to do a paper on Edgar Allan Poe.
Ah.
And instead, I did a comic book about my teacher at the time stuck in all of the Poe stories. I do not understand how that did not get me sent to a guidance counselor, because I think I almost killed her off three times in it.
Well, I mean, Edgar Allan Poe was doing that. You were just you were illustrating with an imaginative new character playing the lead.
But I think the assignment was, what are your reactions to these stories? And I just did whatever the reaction to being in the story was. And, you know, I've just always loved the visual art of storytelling. And, you know, I never really thought I would get more into the writing aspect of it, because for the most part I always wrote little stories, like things that are only a couple pages, because everything was mostly gags. I was a joke writer for comics, or, you know, my original webcomic Grunk was a four panel gag. That's what a newspaper strip typically is. It's a gag strip. It's three to four panels, ends with a punchline.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, you know, I did a couple of longer stories for Fraggle Rock and a couple other things. And then out of the blue one day, after I had tweeted about the new My Little Pony show back when it was still new, I think this was at the end of season one or at the beginning of season two, I sent out a tweet and I was like, you know, this new My Little Pony show really isn't that bad. It's super funny. And there was a Benny Hill bit that I was talking about. Like, oh my God. It's the Benny Hill. My song and everything.
My Little Pony?
In My Little Pony. and you would not believe some of the stuff that they're doing. Like, they have an entire episode that is basically just a David Bowie romp. Like, they even call the villains the Diamond Dogs. It's super funny. And so I tweeted about it, and somebody contacted me from IDW, the editor, and he's like, we just got that license. Do you want to write it? And I was like, I'd really feel more comfortable drawing it. And he's like, no, your artwork is actually too cute for My Little Pony.
too cute?
You can write it.
Too cute for My Little Pony.
Yeah. And we brought on a guy named Andy Price, who's been one of my best friends in comics for years, to draw it. And I think you can really tell in a lot of those books that it is written and drawn by a team of two people with this, like, beautiful love-hate friendship going on. Because I know what he hates to draw, which means I love to put it in the comic. And it was, we text each other and he's like, why is this MC Escher stare room in here? And I was like, oh, it's in there for 5 pages. Good luck with that.
Oh no. And, torturing those you love. And that's,
but
so
you
that
can
was
tell that it's so fun. And, you know, we had fun together on that book. And we, you know, that went from being a project where they told me it might only last for 4 issues. They were like, let's just get 4 issues in the can. That's an overall story. That means you can make a trade paperback of it, which is the larger bound comic, where they can throw it in Scholastic Book Fair and just be done with it. And then all of a sudden off the bat, you know, I'm, you know, they've announced the project, it's gone up for pre-order, and the first issue like pre-sold 100,000 copies right off the bat.
Oh, geez.
Wow. Yeah, and that's when all of a sudden, like, all of these comic news outlets started being like, because it outsold, you know, Batman and Spider-Man and all of these other books. And people are like, this is like the My Little Pony revolution. This is when all of a sudden all of these people had to take note that what is considered a children's title got those kind of numbers.
And was connecting, I mean, across audiences.
Yeah, and it was multi-generational. It's an all-ages book. So, you know, there's adult fans of the show, so they were ordering the comic. And then, you know, we have all the kids that love the comic. So it was just this absolutely bizarre comic renaissance of, oh, the tie-in, media tie-in books can do really, really well. You know, it's this bizarre thing. I mean, when you think of Spider-Man, Spider-Man is the main product, and all of the movies and whatnot are the spinoff of the comic book. Whereas My Little Pony, we had the TV show, and then we're a spinoff of the TV show. And, you know, it did so well. And, you know, we're looking at this, God, it's got to be 5-7 years later, and it's still going.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah. And it just did the last hurrah.
Yeah, and I mean, they'll rebrand it or they'll do something with it, because My Little Pony can never die. It's been around since the 80s.
Right. You've had so many great, like, pull quotes for that so far, like the My Little Pony revolution, My Little Pony will never die. These could all be T-shirts, Katie, seriously.
Oh, no.
But just to clarify for a moment, so when you were sort of like approached by My Little Pony, that mm-hmm. was the moment that you moved from illustrator and writer for your own pieces to being a writer, like,
yeah,
writing
it was the first time that I was really writing something that I wasn't going to be drawing, you know, which was a very new thing for me. And I know that I had Andy, so it's like I have a direct line to him. I can text him at 3 a.m. and see what he's working on. But it's now gone into things that there are people, you know, times that I write that I don't see it until it's finished. Ooh. Which is just bizarre. I wrote, maybe 11 or 12 issues of the comic for Tangled, the series. There's a Tangled TV show on the Disney Channel, and I wrote a bunch of books for that. And, you know, all of a sudden, then it just went away. Like, they were like, all right, that's a wrap on the project. We're going to see how these do. And then I didn't see a panel until, I think I was at San Diego Comic-Con last year, and I was on a Women of Disney panel. And they threw up one of the pages from one of the books on the big screen. And I was like, this is the first time I've seen any of this.
Wow. Besides the text, because obviously you'd seen written all the text, but hadn't.
Yeah. So, you know, it's bizarre. And especially, you know, coming from the visual background, sometimes I include notes of like, this is kind of how I see it going down. And then it's, you're like, oh, nope, they didn't use that at all. That's fine. It's fine. Fine.
So, yeah, is it fine? It doesn't sound fine.
It's fine. If Disney says it's fine, it's fine.
Oh, jeez. Is Disney listening? No. Let's hope not. No.
No. It's out of my hands at that point. But, you know, that's again why I came back to doing something that was for me as well, because as much as I love working on all of these licenses, you know, you get a little bit of creative burnout, which is one of the reasons that I left My Little Pony, is because how many stories do you have in you that have pastel horses in it, you know?
Well, they start involving David Bowie, Diamond Dogs,
they do.
Right? That's yeah. Katie, let's take a short break. And then, oh, wait, what were you going to say?
No.
Okay, well, don't forget. Okay,
short
break, and we'll be right back. Today on Living Writers, Katie Cook joins us via phone. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Steph behind the glass. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. And today on the program, Katie Cook joins us via phone and from the katiecandraw.com, website. Katie Cook, illustrator, comic artist, writer, nerd, cat enthusiast.
Yes. so many, be honest.
Many hats. So Katie, thanks again for picking the songs. What was the reason for this one?
I think that one is because, so when you asked me for songs, I was sitting there going, oh God, almost everything that I have that's like really recent, like in with me is all on my iTunes account. And I was going through like the archives and I was like, oh my God, I remember listening to this song on repeat. I think I was a freshman or sophomore in college when that song came out in the early 2000s.
And so it takes...
I was like, I listened to this 10 million times on my commute back and forth from Ann Arbor to Detroit to go to school.
Well, and there's songs like that that mean so much in the moment. And then as you, as we get older, then there's that moment again somehow when you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
That self. So not that writers are ever truly like the characters that they're writing about, except maybe there's parts of all of us in our characters that we're writing about, whether it's a comic, a poem, or a novel or something, like something that informs it. Were you at all like a little Callie in Nothing Special? Because that's in chapter one when we meet the little kid.
I would think maybe in the beginning, just that idea of not knowing what your purpose is and wanting to break out of, you know, what is your life to try something else, you know, because in the first chapter, you know, she's little in the very first chapter, and then it breaks back into her in high school. And she's talking to she talks to these little plant spirits that are always floating around. And, you know, it's that thought that every single teenager has of, I am meant for more than the drudgery of this life. And that's something that I resonated with probably in high school very, very much. Of course, you know, back when being a nerd was not cool, mm-hmm. was when I was a nerd, which is really unfair. I would have been very well liked in the same age, but back in the 90s, I was not.
Katie, hold on there for a second. I still think high school is its own sort of ecosystem. I'm not sure it's always as evolved as maybe. I don't know.
It is. It's a terrarium of hormones.
Right.
It is. I guess it's a rite of passage for most people. I did not have a great time, and you know, I got very mocked for the things that I loved. But you know, you gotta wear that awkwardness with stubborn pride, because it got me to where I am, because I embrace that I love comics, I love you know, superheroes. I love manga. I love anime. I love things that a lot of adults seem to consider childish. And I have turned that into a career.
Yeah.
You know, I now get to say, oh, well, I have to go, I have to go to Disneyland and sign some of my artwork. You know, sorry, I got to go to Disneyland for work. That is a sentence I've actually used. And then I can walk into any bookstore and I can see stuff that I've done for Star Wars or for My Little Pony that had my name on it. And I do well enough with that that I got to take a break and say, hey, I'm going to go off on my own for a year and do this comic called Nothing Special. And, you know, it's I live my life's dream right now. It's amazing. I am hard pressed to find anything I would change about my life. I love my job. I love my kids. I have an insanely supportive husband who works at the University of Michigan.
That's a shout out to Ryan.
Shout out to Ryan. He's the best, and he's so supportive because I stress this family out all the time because I set my own deadlines and then I get really overambitious and then I'm down in my basement cave for many, many hours, you know, just working on things. But, you know, they all face it with a, well, that panel looks great, Katie. Hey, mommy, this, I love, you know, this thing this week. Because at the same time, they get to be part of it, you know. You know, they're all very involved in what I do. And I love that. I love that, you know, my kids are really excited to tell their friends about what my job is. My kids sit in my office and draw with me.
Oh,
you know, sometimes my husband gets to come on, you know, little adventures with me. We go to a lot of comic book conventions all over the place. And when he can take the time off of work, he always comes with.
Well, it sounds so, I mean, it sounds great, Katie. It does. And it seems like in Nothing Special, not only then are like is your family in like in layers of it too, but you even managed to connect, it seems like, Ann Arbor into it. Mm-hmm. Like in chapter two we have Pioneer High School that maybe looks a little bit more like Community if we're looking at
that. It's all mixed around and it's but yeah, it's they do go to Pioneer High School, and in an upcoming chapter you see that Declan's home address is in Ann Arbor. You know, I'm an Ann Arbor kid. I grew up in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, so it's
and
great to see
then,
those moments.
In the prom episode from a few weeks ago, there is a poster for Get Hype, which was what the theater kids over at Skyline were doing that weekend.
So it's perfect, right? Just drawing these parts in. But I did, from chapter two, I wrote relatable when I was in my notes, but it wasn't because of, oh, I know Pioneer High School. And plus it makes for a funny name if you're thinking about like that the character's about to be kind of going into this other world of adventure, right? But the relatable part was what you were talking about earlier about how it's, you're meeting Kelly and you're seeing like how she feels, like, you know, I've been going to school with these kids, like these other kids since, you know, kindergarten, but I don't feel like I know them. I don't feel like they know me.
Yeah. That's the big thing in the first book, is kind of her not trusting that anybody actually wants to get to know her. And you know, there is, it's a YA book, and there's a little bit of a mushy romance between her and the other main character, Declan, especially in the first book. That's a very awkward thing, because if there's one thing that I love to write, it is two teenagers that have no idea how to talk to each other. It is so fun. And when people are like, oh, why'd you have to do it like that? It was like, I am embracing what is essentially the most awkward time,
yes,
of a person's life, especially when it comes to interpersonal relationships. You know, you don't know how to talk to people about feelings when you're a teenager.
And you might find yourself competing with the spirit of a dead plant for someone's affections if you're in the Nothing Special world, which is very special.
Yeah. And then in book two, it's much more about the friendships around them. You know, there's another character named Lasser who is a total slime ball in season one, and he goes through this kind of personal growth throughout book one. And then in book two, you know, all of a sudden they're all very chummy, and you find out it's because they are teaching him how to be a better person. And part of the joke is that, you know, they teach him some things, and then he's getting all of his other social cues from romance novels that he has found, which is why he gets slapped a lot. But he's learning from his mistakes is the whole thing he always says. He's like, I am learning from my mistakes. And it's just, I love this notion of somebody who, out of context of our world, because, you know, he's a demon, is just like, oh, is this how I approach someone? I'm going to read this line from this book and see if it works. It does not work.
And
there's a very sweet romance story, like just kind of side plot for him in book two that we've been building towards. And that's another thing with it being a YA book. I am not shying away from the fact that his love interests bounce around from being male and female, which I think is a very important theme, especially in a YA book.
Yep.
And I mean, he's a hoot. I mean, he has gone from what every single reader hated him in the first book to everyone just loving him. And I think a lot of that is because a lot of book two's focus is on Declan and Lasser's friendship, while Callie just tries to keep them both alive. she very much plays the Hermione role in book two, where she's just like, oh my God, you guys are going to get killed.
It's clear how much you love these characters, Katie.
I do. I'm very fond of them. And, you know, it's because they're very special to me. You know, they make me laugh. I love trying to figure out how they would interpret a situation. And overall, you just get so attached to something when you're drawing it. And, you know, when I draw so many panels of these characters, you know, that's why so many panels, even though I could convey it just having one of them in the panel saying the line, I love to draw everybody in the background, you know, with a little motion, whether it's touching a shoulder or saying a little, you know, background gag, because I want people to understand how they interact with each other on this insane level that I think they interact with each other.
Well, and so you're literally then through the visual context showing their interconnection and these subtexts, whether it's like that little joke or...
You know, I make a very big point of, you know, some people, if you look at a comic, it's just people standing, people standing, people standing, people standing. My characters are very, you know, noodly armed. I am a cartoonist. I do not draw stuff the Marvel way. You know, everyone it's very organic. And, you know, I love to make sure that people are touching or interacting, you know, in every single panel. So no one is just standing there. You know, I want to show this ease of companionship at all times, especially with the character Radish, who is the spirit of the sentient Radish that just follows him around, and he's very cranky. He's always touching their hair, or he sits in the hoodie pocket on the back of Declan's back all the time, or he's playing with something in the background. You know, and I try and always include things like that because, again, it shows this lushness to the relationship or to the world that I think can be really important in visual storytelling, because I don't want things to be stagnant. If you ever see me do a stagnant panel, know that I was in a rush. But I really try not to do them. Book one, I think, can feel a little stiff, especially in the beginning, because I hadn't been drawing a lot. You know, I'd been the writer for a really long time at that point. I had drawn some of the Star Wars books at that point, but that's periodically. There was not drawing on a really consistent basis. And then as we get to the end of book one, I think you can really tell that's when I really clicked of, this is how I draw these guys. This is how, you know, everything's going to look. And then I took a few months off and I really buckled down and figured out where I wanted this story to go with book two. And then the second I started drawing book two, we were off to the races. I think book two, the artwork, as much as, you know, I love book one, the artwork that I'm doing for book two is some of the best I've done in my career. And I think it's because I have finally gotten into a place with everyone and with how I draw that it's like, wait a minute, this is something that clicked. You know, as an artist, you're always trying to find your style. And I've always known, you know, kind of what my style is for the past several years. But all of a sudden, things are becoming more organic, and I'm having way more fun. You can always tell when someone's all of a sudden having a blast.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I look forward to it. I mean, as I'm, you know, last night I was finishing up a cover for this new Star Wars kids book. And the second I sent it off, it was like, well, I can fit in one more panel of nothing special before I go upstairs and wrap up for the night. It was like 10:30. I was like, I'll finish this, go have a glass of wine and hang out with Ryan and go to bed. But there's that level of fun for me that it's like, oh, even though I'm done for the day, let's just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what television is anymore. I don't watch it because I'm mostly focused on just working on the book at night.
And it sounds like you need to. It's like you need that engagement of that world that you're making because you're in it.
It's cathartic. It's all of a sudden, it's like I said, I'm really invested in these kids for some reason. So it's like, this has got to be what it's like to finally find, you know, this story as an author that's like, this must be a multi-book series. I can't say goodbye to any of these people because I cannot imagine right now not coming home and drawing these guys. You know, I love drawing Declan's floopy hair, and I bet we haven't mentioned yet, he's a fairy. He's got little pink wings. They're hysterical. Callie's, you know, ponytail and, you know, with radish tucked into it. And I love drawing Lasser's stupid little shop apron with the giant bow in the back. It's just, there's little details that I really look forward to drawing in every panel.
Katie, we're going to take a short break and then we'll be right back. We've got another quarter left in the show. It's flown by, but we'll be back just after this break. Today on the program, Katie Cook. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We'll be back.
Tonight, a little bit weaker than you used to be. Broadway is dark tonight. See the young man sitting in the old man's bar, waiting for his turn to die.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, so glad you did. Katie Cook is here joining us via phone. Katie, thanks for picking Goo Goo Dolls.
I need to remind everyone the 90s happened.
Right. That might be like the next project somehow. That might surface, right? But yeah, even listening to those opening lines, like absolutely brilliant. Sitting in the old man's bar, right? Okay, but with the time that we have left, I wanted to thank you so much for being game for radio today and for the program. You mentioned that you took a couple months off. So at a certain point, like when book one ended, because you wanted to. So what is the map? It sounds like map out where the story was going.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? And maybe we can even get to what you mentioned at the top of the program when we were thinking about like the chapters themselves and how there's an arc within the chapter.
Yeah, it's, you know, coming from someone that traditionally writes comics and it's like everything has to be like 20 pages. It's like even if you're thinking of something that's a 4-issue arc, you have to think of it in those 20-page breakdowns. When it came to Nothing Special, since I knew I was going to be putting it all online, I just free-for-alled. Like I did not say page one, panel one. I just wrote panel, 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 panel. So it's a very long document. And it's every single thing because the first book is 29 chapters. The new one is 40. And almost all of them are longer chapters, sometimes twice as long as my old ones were. So I just doubled my amount of work right off the bat. So I went and I took this huge script and I printed it out and I put it in a binder And of course, you read it 10 million times, and I have friends that are editors that I brought on and hired them to help me, you know, fix it and all this other stuff. Because as much as some people say, I don't need an editor, you need an editor.
Everyone does. Like,
I'm just going to throw that out there. You need one.
That's good.
Even if you think you don't. And, you know, I sat there with a giant stack of Post-it notes, and I would kind of count out a general kind of area of 30 to 40 panels, and I would see if I had a good break within that, of like, what would be a good cliffhanger for that week? And sometimes I had a good note of like, oh man, if this is only 32 panels, this is going to be a breeze to draw. Thank God. and then sometimes you get 60 and it was like, oh, because I'm very adamant. I don't want to break it at a bad point. That week note has to end on a good note.
Right.
Well,
because
so sometimes I want to be lazy and say, why don't we just end it here? And it's like, that's not it. You can't end it on that one. You got to end it on this panel over here, because this is the one that's going to catch everybody. This is the one that's going to make every single person in the comments go, oh my God, it ended on another cliffhanger. What's wrong with this woman? So I always try to end it on either a really great, you know, piece of dialogue punch, or a really great moment, or a great reveal, like something's about to be revealed. This week ends when they see something off screen and they all react to it, that kind of thing. Or sometimes it's like a really great, the chapter that has not been posted yet, that won't be online for a few weeks, that I just drew last week. It ends, they see this big, crazy mansion for the first time, which has basically been their destination for the 20 chapters that we've been following them. And, you know, you see the radish thing. I don't get it. Is that impressive? No, that kind of note.
Right.
And it's very important for me that it breaks down into these. It's like how any person writing breaks down their book into chapters of, like, where do you end it? Where do you start it? Except I want to take into consideration the visual as well as the story. And that's really fun. And then I always shoot myself in the foot, because even if it has less panels, I really try and make the arrangement of the panels very, very interesting. One of the things about Nothing Special that is I post it online, and I post it in a vertical scrolling format. So think of like a Japanese scroll as you unravel it. It is meant to be read on a phone or a tablet. Or scrolling down on your computer. It's not meant to have page, turn the page, page, turn the page. It is meant to be a reveal as you scroll down. So that gives me the ability to play around with the vertical narrative of the story. I think it's in chapter maybe 6 or 7, I don't know, of the new season. They're playing tag, going through this magical village. And I got to play around with these kids basically doing parkour off of, you know, stone fences and things like that. And that all blends together of them running around town. Or there's a part in, you know, book one where there is a horrible tree monster that's walking down a vertical area of a tree. So I just have this giant tree trunk that goes down the side of this panel that is like 90 inches long. This is not a typical comic book panel. And that's one of the reasons that I actually really love doing the online comic, is that I got to free myself from thinking, how do I put this into a book? So now my focus is, how do I make this really pop as far as the visuals for someone scrolling through it online?
Because it's different, like you're saying.
Yeah.
This is it's a new concept of a book.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really meant to be read online. And, you know, I get a lot of people are like, when are you going to put it into a book? I was like, I don't know how. That is future Katie's problem.
Yeah. Just stay in the story. Just stay with the story. This world.
So
is...
I'm having a blast making it the way it is now. And I'm having, you know, a riot sometimes each week, being like, all right, so I have this big moment. How do I tell it in a new, interesting, different way? Because I don't need to limit it to the normal comic book page. So I can break out of panels. I can, you know, do all of this other weird stuff. So I've, like I said, I've been having a blast drawing this comic, because I am all of a sudden, I don't have to limit everything to little rectangles.
And so when did you know that you wanted it to be a vertical narrative? Did it happen because of webtoons.com, like how their platform was encouraging it?
You know, when Webtoon approached me to do a project with them, you know, it took me a while. You know, I kind of hemmed and hawed on it for a little while. And then I was looking at what people are doing with the site. And I noticed that I liked the format better when people were taking advantage of that vertical format. And again, like I said, in the first few chapters, I was really still thinking about how to put it into a book later. So, you know, there are that's rectangle, 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 and they're spaced out differently. And I think that there is a point, I think it's when Callie and Declan get thrown off of the back of a mountain at some point in book one, because it stands up. So it's a really weird visual where the plane of the story goes from being this horizontal line to it tilts and they fall off of this now vertical line. And I really like how I handle it visually, not to toot my own horn. But I think that's the chapter where all of a sudden I was like, look at what I can do with this.
Right. That must have been such an epiphany.
It is, because all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute. Where else can I do something like this? And I think, like I said, that was like this key moment where you're like, oh, this is different. This is, I don't have to do the tiny rectangles. I can do this however I want. And that's when I started just having, you know, a blast every single week. Again, it's, you know, it's fun for me because all of a sudden I get to think of how do I get to do this differently? Or what's a way that no one has ever handled something like this. And for me, you know, I am very cartoony, and a lot of people do not take me seriously because I do kids comics and I'm very cartoony. And because of a lot of these vertical panels and interesting things, Nothing Special has garnered a lot of respect. It made a couple of best comics of the year lists last year because of the new way of approaching the online stuff, which was really, really quite exciting.
Well, Katie, I can see why. I really love Nothing Special. I'm a new fan.
Thank you.
And everyone check out Nothing Special. Katie, this hour has flown. Thanks for talking today.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Come back anytime, in person
anytime,
or via phone.
Good deal.
Okay. So you've been listening, everyone, to Katie Cook. We've been talking about a lot, but focusing on Nothing Special, the latest chapter launching today. You can check out more about Katie Cook on katiecandraw.com and also across Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Steph for engineering. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time. Slap it on, it was all okay.